I happened to tweet about not being able to get as much exercise during the winter as I usually enjoy in the summer. And of all people, John Carmack contacted me and asked me if I wanted an Oculus Quest 2 sent to me. Now, I have a bunch of pretty firm rules in life, and one of them is that if John Carmack offers you VR headsets, you say yes. So an Oculus Quest showed up, and because I was sequestered in a hotel for a week, I decided to try it out. Here's what it's like when somebody who remembers a 300 baud modem coming online is put deep inside cutting-edge virtual reality. This is Jason Scott Talks His Way Out of It, a podcast about technology, history, and getting myself out of debt. Thanks to Daniel Boyd, Peter Healy, and the hundreds of other supporters on Patreon and elsewhere who have been supporting me and helping me get out of debt. Let's get out of the way that you have to have a Facebook account to use an Oculus Quest 2. As somebody who takes the attitude of joining the crowd and maintaining my presence in as many places as possible instead of trying to be secretive, this doesn't really bother me. I mean, make no mistake, Facebook is definitely one of those companies folks will deny they ever had anything to do with it, and it'll be a plot twist in crime shows to turn out that somebody was actually working there. But there's also the case that they have an awful lot of money. They purchased this company, which they may or may not have had wisdom in doing so, and for one shining moment, they are pushing out a lot of very advanced technology for a very cheap price. If you walk back through a lot of what we now think of as vintage hardware, there's a lot of personal, moral, and economic compromises scattered like mines throughout all of this history. I don't deny it. I do not in any way endorse it. But I do make myself part of the conversation by using these things. With that in mind, let me describe what an Oculus Quest 2 means to a person like myself. I still have hazy memories of my mother spending money trying to do something for her kids, recently divorced and living all together in a way small apartment. She bought an Atari 2600, which at the time was hundreds of dollars, to be able to allow us to play games. But she did not have the money to buy cartridges. So I played an awful lot of combat with my brother, and saving literally pennies for weeks, I was able to buy Space Invaders for the Atari 2600, which is enjoyable, but let's not pretend that's months of enjoyment after you get it. The Oculus Quest arrived in a beautifully packaged box, and inside were a number of small parts, two hand grip things that you put in each of your hands, and a headset that you put over your head. There were no other wires required. I have dealt with previous VR headsets throughout my life. I played Dactyl Nightmare, which was a modified Amiga, inside of a very bizarre stand that you stood in an arcade, and you always had to have someone assist you getting into it. It was wires coming in every direction, and it was clunky at best. This Oculus didn't have any wires coming in any direction. When you pop it on, you're blind. It's black. You can't see anything, and you press a button, and a logo appears in front of you. And then something magical happened. The Oculus has a black and white camera that pops up that is mounted in the front of the mask such that, to you inside, it feels in every way like the mask has disappeared and you're wearing glasses. You can see the room around you at a frame rate enough for you to walk around without hitting anything. At this point, it makes a guess as to the floor in your room. And the guess is pretty good, All you have to do is take one of the controllers and touch it against the floor to be able to focus it exactly where it needs to be. You then use one of the controllers to draw a circle on the floor, ensuring that you're not overlapping with any furniture or objects. You're basically drawing your perimeter. If I'm not making it clear, this was as seamless as turning on a piece of equipment and pressing two buttons. Everything just worked. Once I defined the perimeter, it stuck me in a room. And the modern VR headsets really truly feel like you're in a place. There's these virtual environments built in that are essentially simple rooms with a few bits of motion here and there, a bit of blinking lights in the corner, or a virtual fireplace. And you look around, and it all just seems to work. Your brain starts thinking that it's actually in a location. And that perimeter I mentioned, the one that you drew, it will appear like a grid if you walk too close to where you've drawn the lines. If you stick your head through the perimeter, that black and white camera comes on again, and you can see the regular room. It's almost like you're looking through a curtain into reality for one moment before you dip back again into the fantasy. Functionally, this is all brilliant. It is as clear and wonderful as the first time that you see 16-bit graphics and realize that you're going to be able to have purples and yellows and blues all on the same screen for whatever reason you wish there to be. That you're going to have a sharp, clear bit of graphics over what used to be there. Even more weird for me were two other features. First of all, the headphones don't exist. It actually blasts sound into your ears from some sort of technology on the side, meaning that you can hear the room around you, the actual room, while also experiencing the sound of the virtual environment. That, to me, took away so many concerns of virtual reality beforehand, where you were shut off, put away, and constantly feeling like you were one poor swing or one small movement away from slamming yourself in actual reality. Additionally, there was a feature called Hands, simply Hands, where you could actually get rid of the controllers and use your real hands to do all of the motion, the selecting, and the moving around of menus inside of virtual reality. That we had jumped that far ahead in such a short time has blown me away. So, for 1 week, in a terrible hotel room, I could strap on this headset, grab the controllers, and do stuff without ever feeling like I was ever in a grotty hotel room. So what did I do? First of all, it really is overpowering how much your brain will immediately switch over to this virtual space and accept it as real. Think of the dimensionality of all of the different locations that you see as being the actual place you are. You quickly forget that you're next to a really grungy bed inside of a little tiny box somewhere in a hotel, and you start feeling like you are in a cyber city, or fighting other creatures, or battling and switching between different locations. And that level of escape is probably incredibly alluring to a whole range of people. I can't imagine what 23-year-old me would have thought of all this. To have that level of travel and accessibility right there. There's a variety of games for the Oculus. Many of them are rhythm games or chat spaces, or in some rare situations, virtual offices. This dream that you would sit down with this thing strapped to your head and work for 5 or 8 hours a day with your coworkers, and being able to share information or work on your computer. And I'm not sure how realistic that is. It took me days to be able to spend more than 30 or 40 minutes in this thing at a time. I really found that I would get, in some cases, dizzy or feel a little bit off, and I'd have to relax or move on to other things. Nowadays, I can maybe spend an hour and change in it. I'm not sure what I'd be doing to myself if I was truly capable of spending 5 or 6 hours. And so as a result, there's kind of a division there. The visualization of a world where people will be in these things all day and all night, and the reality that many of us can only dip our heads in, like some sort of extremely loud bar or clattering restaurant that we've met some folks in before we move on to where we would prefer to be. I'm not sure if that'll change with improvements or if that's always going to be the case. There's a game in it called Beat Saber, where you take two lightsabers and squares come at you and you slice them in rhythm to the music. It's essentially a standing up rhythm game where you're using your arms to be able to keep up with the beat. And I've always had problems with rhythm games. I can't do many of them. For some reason, I can't send the signals to my legs to move in different directions. Maybe I haven't tried hard enough, or maybe it's just not something I'm wired to do. In this case, I forced myself to get a little bit better, and after a couple weeks, I've been able to get up to playing at normal level. Expert completely confounds me. It might as well be a brick wall of things coming at me, and I'm completely incapable of thinking on the fly and making it work better. So I'm happy that I'm better at rhythm games than I ever was, but don't expect me to be entering any competitions. What it does do is make me feel like I've exercised. If a game moves along with a pounding enough soundtrack and I'm shifting in place, trying to fire at things, slice them, or otherwise interact with them, at least at the end, I feel like I've gotten a workout. Believe it or not, my favorite single thing of all of the Oculus applications I've used is the browser. They have a Chromium-based browser that floats in the air and has multiple windows, and you turn to look at each of the windows, and it all works pretty well in terms of speed, of flexibility, and being able to do anything that a regular browser would do on a desktop. I've been able to run emularity apps at full speed. I've been able to watch video streaming in one window while having a YouTube video going in another. I've been able to play games online, and I've been able to click on any link and not feel that the whole thing was going to come crashing around to me. It's kind of a beautiful illusion to have an 8-foot window of a browser standing in front of you in your cyber city virtual environment. And so, once again, for me, information wins out over every other application. My second most favorite application is called King Spray, and it's a graffiti game, experience, whatever you want to call it, where you have spray paint and you go to a variety of locations and you draw. Your hands are capable of turning into palettes where you choose different kinds of spray cans and different kinds of colors, and then you spray in a wall, and it's reasonably realistic for spray drips and building up different colors, and the artistic side of me just loves it. There's a feature on the Oculus where you can stream it to a nearby television, so sometimes I'll do that just to share it with somebody, or I will just put it up on a streaming account so that people can weigh in while I play games and do other things. After that, it kind of drops down for me. I mean, I'm more than happy to walk into a chat system and talk to a few people, but I don't really have the time anymore for yet another chat room in my life, even if the people in it are interesting, new, and strange, because, well, I've spent a lot of my life in chat rooms, kind of going in circles, talking about whatever comes to us, sometimes being amused, sometimes being angry, but I'm really focused on getting things done and having the experience of yet another social space just doesn't hold it for me right now. So after spending a few weeks with this toy, with this interesting piece of technology, I'm both entranced by the possibilities and I'm also understanding if people don't want to play a part in it. Besides even the Facebook requirement, there's all sorts of issues with people who have inner ear conditions. Some of my best friends who I would love in this experience can't use an Oculus because it makes them sick in a really, truly honest way, a way that I think is essentially insurmountable. It's a world they can't enter, and a world that all of my friends can't play a part in will always, for me, be a part-time situation. Stepping in just for a moment to experience a few things, and then getting back to the real business of my friends. It's a joy to have an Oculus be one of the options I have in any given day, in the same way that I can go outside, play some video games, or work with my Internet Archive collections. It's an option. It's a wonderful thing. And I thank Mr. Carmack for thinking of me. And I appreciate the smattering of folks who have found me in this virtual space and that are allowing me to be my own weird self in there. And I think that while I don't know my long-term prospects for being part of virtual reality, as somebody who has spent so much of his life with a screen in front of him, I guess it was inevitable that I would find myself with a screen and strap it directly to my face. This is Jason Scott Talks His Way Out of It. Thanks to Emilio Oliveira, Forrest Fuqua, James Bequianu, Mark Pilgrim, Scott McGrady, Scott Roseanne, and Wayne Arthurton, along with the hundreds of other supporters on Patreon and elsewhere, who have been supporting me and helping me get out of debt. Again, if you didn't catch that at the beginning, I was handed an Oculus for free. I believe that it's actually part of the law of the land these days that you have to let people know if you get free stuff. This podcast has been an incredible gift to me in terms of people helping contribute to my debt payments, and I didn't want you to think that I was turning around and using it to buy hot technology and play around with it for fun. I just got a note from the IRS, and it's always nice when it's something positive. It's letting me know that my one remaining tax year, 2018, is nearly paid off, and it's just going to be another few months to pay it off. By 2021, I will be 100% caught up on all of the taxes, and I have been extremely diligent in increasing the withholding of my paycheck and pushing all of my podcast money towards paying down any extant taxes for 2020. Your contribution to the Patreon has been an incredible part of this, and I thank everybody who is continually supporting it, and I once again encourage people who have subjects or information they want me to talk about to contact me through all the different ways I can be found, because I love having conversations with people, answering questions, and playing a part in this. This podcast has long ago ceased to be simple fundraising and has become, I like to think, a legacy.